Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. Welcome to the Hoban Minute. Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. Welcome to the Hoban Minute. Today we are talking about the rigorous road of regulatory compliance, and we are joined by none other than founder and principal of the Supplement Advisory Group and chair of the American Herbal Products Association Cannabis Committee, Mr. Asa Waldenstein. Asa, thank you for being here with us today.
Thanks so much. I'm really pumped to be here. You know, I wanted to say that the Hoban Minute got me through the pandemic, whether it's riding bikes on the bike trails here in Longmont or going to the gym or painting the outside of the house. The Hoban Minute was really my friend through the pandemic, so it's a great honor to be on your show today.
There's no higher compliment than that, as I'm sure you're aware. And, you know, it's been a real fun experience to get to spend time with people in this medium, in this capacity, and during this time when we were all so isolated. That was actually, you know, while we were planning on doing this podcast, even before the pandemic was really, we found a silver lining in it to spend so much time recording these episodes and getting to speak with all of these wonderful people, yourself included. And, you know, before we get into what can only be described in the cannabis industry as the rigorous regulatory compliance road, let's talk for a moment about the fact that it is springtime here in beautiful, semi-sunny Colorado. We're kind of a gray day while we're recording here, but things are opening back up. We are seeing widespread access to the vaccine. I see Governor Polis every day posting on social media that there are now sites around the state where people can just go. They don't even need to set up an appointment. Things are getting back to a sense of normalcy. And one of the biggest ways that that is expressing itself is, of course, getting to go do things again, getting to go be with people and getting to attend some events, even though it might be in a limited capacity. So I put to you, Asa, what are you most looking forward to here in the immediate future now that we are starting to get to enjoy being around each other once again?
Oh, I love that. Hands down, live music, huge live music fan. So I'm really looking forward to getting out with my friends and new friends and going to Red Rocks and other venues here in Colorado. And I'm looking forward to that. And also kind of hitting the trade show circuit, getting out, doing more public speaking events and really getting out of the network and hanging out with people.
I mean, we live in one of the greatest places for live music venues. So it's hard to disagree with you there. And it's wonderful to have so many cool artists that come through Colorado spreading their good vibes. And I know, Asa, you also had a chance to attend the NoCo event here in Colorado. What was that experience like getting to speak on this subject matter of which you are just an absolute expert when it comes to all things regulatory? What was it like to be on stage again with some of your colleagues and friends getting to discuss that for a live audience?
It was wonderful. And I couldn't have thought of two better folks to present with, you know, after being in the virtual presentation format for years. So Bob Hoban and Tim Gordon and myself on the big stage talking about regulations. And it was just wonderful to be back with everyone. It felt like no time had passed. I would like to say that being back at the trade show was kind of fun, but also funny because I like to embrace the silliness of it. So there was a lot of awkward handshake, fist bump, hug type things. But, you know, all things considered, it was great.
The holy triumvirate, if you will. And this is a perfect segue for us because while it was funny to try to navigate, you know, are we fist bumping? Are we doing the foot tap? How are we saying hello? I'm sure that another thing stood out to you at this event, which of course is how companies are marketing themselves, particularly in the cannabinoid space. I'm sure you saw some things at NoCo that made you cringe a little bit because you were like, guys, we know you can't say this about your product. We know you can't market yourself in this way. Was that an experience that you had at the NoCo event at all?
Yes, certainly was. So I was hired by one company in particular to do free regulatory consultations at their booth. So a lot of people came by and said, hey, this is my label. Or we pulled up their website and we looked at it. But what I noticed is that the industry has certainly matured. So we've come out of the pandemic, and the players that are in the industry now, they really want to be compliant. So there's a few folks out there that are, you know, not bad people at all, but maybe they just don't know the rules about saying pain or inflammation or, you know, other types of even more egregious claims than that. But people really want to learn. So I felt like the, in general, the industry is more receptive to this. I will say that I did walk around to several booths and say, "Hi, I'm Asa. Would you like some free feedback on your label or booth claims?" And, you know, people aren't always the most receptive to that. And I would like to say that it was also a big shock, not to distract the conversation too much, to see the large amount of Delta 8 products, gummies, everything else that were being just handed out in abundance. It was exciting because I like the therapeutic aspects of that, but also somewhat terrifying as well, too.
Well, and it is something that we should absolutely spend a few minutes talking about, because it's not something that we've explored too heavily on this program, but it, of course, is the minor cannabinoid that has just kind of taken the world by storm. And it was, as you put, so prevalent at the NoCo event. It's probably not a stretch to say that there's a lot of folks out there who are either sitting on CBD biomass, still in flower form, sitting on some form of extracted CBD material, and they just simply cannot enter it into the marketplace for a number of reasons. Maybe because the market is just so oversaturated, maybe because they don't have the proper chain of custody and documentation that they really needed to have in order to enter that product into the marketplace. But this new cannabinoid, and it's not new, but it certainly has just taken over and been so heavily marketed over the past couple months. Let's talk for a moment about Delta 8, and maybe at a high level, what is your advice or critique of how this cannabinoid is in the marketplace right now? I mean, it seems like it is fitting a little bit of a gray area niche because of how closely it related, at least on paper, it may be to Delta 9 THC, which is, of course, the cannabinoid in question when you look at the federal legal distinction between hemp and marijuana. So I'm just interested, particularly for any of our listeners out there who may be doing something with Delta 8, what is a couple of things that should be in their mind?
Great. I love that. So if I was out there and I was selling Delta 8, I would really be thinking about diversifying. I wouldn't want to put all my eggs in that basket. So legislative and regulatory and legal things aside, a lot of the people potentially making Delta 8 and selling Delta 8 products now might not have the level of good manufacturing practices aptitude that's required for an adjustable product, which is probably dietary supplements. So if someone was selling Delta 8, I guess I would say, make sure you're following dietary supplement regulations as best you can, which is when you get a raw material in, check it for contaminants, making sure that your manufacturing process is verified, a member of quality checks off along the way. And really, I think most importantly, and I haven't seen this at all, is my recommendation would be if someone wants to or insist on selling Delta 8 products, I personally would put it in a child protective packaging. So a kid or someone who inadvertently wouldn't go in and take a couple hundred milligrams of a Delta 8 product and then either hurt themselves or drive. So I would treat it as on the THC side in particular with the packaging.
That's some excellent advice and absolutely worth heeding for anybody out there who fits that category. We appreciate you sharing that insight with us, Asa. And when we introduced you, we highlighted that you are the chair of the APA Cannabis Committee. And I want to talk for a second about APA. How important was it for that association to recognize cannabis in any capacity, whether it, in the early days of their recognition of the plant, maybe it was just the more on the CBD side and the hemp derived cannabinoid side, but that association seems to be a huge legitimizing force for cannabinoids as an ingredient. Can you maybe speak a little bit about why it's so important to have their support?
Yeah, that's great. So APA, I think, is celebrating its 39th anniversary this year. That's a lot of history, a lot of people that run other committees, and a lot of great members that bring hundreds of years of experience to the table. And I don't know if you know this, but the APA Cannabis Committee is celebrating its 11th anniversary this year. So that means that APA had the foresight in putting a cannabis committee together all around this one wonderful plant and herb 11 years ago. I mean, this was very controversial back then when many in the supplement industry didn't even really want to mention the word cannabis. So it really shows the foresight and thinking of APA of helping to legitimize this plant, as you mentioned, but also to help pave the way for a responsible commerce of all herbal products, including the cannabis plant.
That's extremely fascinating, and that's absolutely something I didn't know, and really highlights, as you said, the forward thinking of that association. And before you really enter the space that you're in now, where you are advising and consulting with so many companies in the cannabis space about their products, their marketing, making sure that they are in compliance with the regulations and policies that are out there, what were you doing before that? Were you involved in the herbal product space, in the ingredient and supplement space? Give us a little bit of your history as well.
Yeah, that's great. I love talking about this. I don't know if many in the industry know this, but I started off as an idealistic herbalist, walking around the hills of Santa Cruz and then California, picking wild herbs and making medicine out of them, so wildcrafting. So I actually have a certified clinical herbalism background. And then I started making dietary supplements in 2001, which, you know, we hear the term Wild West days, but that was truly, in my opinion, the Wild West days of dietary supplements. It was years and years before even GMPs for dietary supplements came around. So I've kind of grown up in the industry making dietary supplement products for many, many years. Over the years, I've probably helped formulate, develop, manufacture, and market in a compliant manner several hundred dietary supplement and herbal products.
And that's exactly what makes you so qualified and such an expert in the space, and why anybody who's out there who has questions, concerns, wants to really make sure that they're doing everything right, they need to contact you, Asa, because you are absolutely the person to talk to. And this is something that has been a thread on the Hoban Minute, as we've talked about different regulatory matters, as Bob has sat here and postulated when we might see something definitive from FDA as far as forthcoming regulations. A lot of what we do because we're anticipating something. We're trying to predict the future. We're taking all of that expertise, all of that knowledge that we've gained over the years to try to avoid what potentially could be a major pitfall for a company if they are marketing themselves in an inappropriate manner. Obviously, we're still waiting for some guidance at the federal level on policies for cannabinoids, policy for CBD. But give us a little bit of a sense for what companies can do to prepare. What can they do for this coming wave, if you will, of new regulations, new policies? There's obviously a lot of positioning and a lot of leveraging your expertise from having decades of experience in this sector, what we can be thinking about, what we can be doing to prepare for a time when it maybe isn't so much the Wild West.
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. I love that, Eric. So just because the regulations for manufacturing hemp cannabinoids in this example are not super clear, it doesn't mean that everyone should go home, go to sleep, and not comply with anything. I'm stating the obvious here. But so what does that mean? Well, the closest statutory or regulatory framework that we have is dietary supplement regulation. So what can companies be doing now to prepare? Well, definitely working on their cGMPs for dietary supplement, making sure that their manufacturing process is lined up, and also investing in safety studies. So what does that really mean? It means proving that your products safe, your manufacturing products safe. That can be through working with companies like ValidCare that are doing real world data, or at least starting to have that conversation in your conference room or your boardroom about the future of hemp cannabinoids is going to require some type of safety requirement or proof. So starting to think about that now is really important.
Do you ever feel when you're consulting and when you're advising on regulatory compliance that you're coming from the future? Do you have that feeling a lot when you're working with clients and different folks who are in the manufacturing space for cannabinoids? Do they ever, you ever get that look where people just look at you like, how do you know all of this? Do you come from the future? It's something that Bob says a lot in his work. I'm wondering if you ever get that feeling with your work.
Yeah, you know, every instance is different. There are so many parallel paths between the early days of dietary supplements and the hemp cannabinoid world now. So it is most certainly on a collision course. And so being for me, living on the intersection of the hemp cannabis world and the dietary supplements, which I've done most of my career, is really interesting. So we can interpret the tea leaves or the litmus of where the FDA is leaning, or, you know, what's going to happen in Congress with Bill HR 841, and really plan for the future. And I guess to kind of sum it up is making sure products are manufactured in a compliant manner, compliant to dietary supplement regulations if they're ingestible, and making sure companies are thinking about, you know, again, not to repeat myself too much, but how to prove safety. And you know, when people may think, here's this really exuberant guy, Asa, from the future that loves compliance. How does he know what he's talking about? I love when people may approach me with that, because I say, well, let's look at FDA enforcement trends. Let's look at FTC enforcement trends. They're enforcing these certain aspects of over to the marketing compliance side, whether it might be claims made in videos, claims made in hashtags, product reviews, that kind of thing. And oftentimes I get to say, or my clients are like, you know, I get to support, they get to say, I told you so. See, this round of FDA warning letters came out and cited these specific examples that maybe weren't commonplace in the marketing world a couple of years ago. Again, hashtags, meta tags, product reviews, those kind of things.
Well, that's such an interesting point when you talk about looking at the trends. And of course, one of those trends has been the warning letters. And something that's interesting is that we haven't seen companies, and perhaps this is just because not a lot of testing has been done, but we haven't seen companies necessarily getting in trouble or getting in hot water for a product making somebody sick or a product not doing something that it's supposed to do. The majority of these letters, maybe all of these letters, has really come down to language. As you're saying, it's the marketing, it's what you're putting out on social media, what you have on your website, what's on the product label. This is the trend that we've seen for what people are getting slapped on the wrist for. And I'm interested in what people can do to just be wise as far as avoiding getting a letter from the FDA. But then I also want to put this in the context of this last year, which is, how many people took advantage of COVID-19 and were putting something out there that said, hey, that our CBD product or our cannabinoid product, it fights COVID-19, it cures COVID-19, it treats COVID-19. Did you see a lot of that, I guess, in the last year? And was there a reaction that you saw from FDA as specific to hemp-derived products and COVID?
Yep, indeed, tons of reaction from the FDA and FTC. There was actually a lot of joint warning letters on this. And several of the companies that received these numerous warning letters, in particular in the hemp space, were, in my opinion, potentially trying to profiteer off the pandemic. But then there was a few, Eric, that really, I think, were well-intentioned, but just didn't know the rules, such as, here's an herbal formula that I found online that fights lung infection similar to COVID-19. And guess what? I'm going to put a hashtag COVID-19. And by putting that hashtag, I'm going to elevate the risk of, you know, of me getting a warning letter. And so it's been really fascinating to watch people's reaction and all through this pandemic and the FDA and FTC coming after them, which, you know, in many cases is the right thing to do. I would like to also point out that the next tier of FDA and FTC enforcement with COVID-related warning letters isn't necessarily just going after the word COVID or hashtag COVID, although we do see those all the time. It's now with the word inflammation. So in the past, the word inflammation maybe wouldn't have got you a warning letter, but now, because in the inflammatory process has to do with the symptomatic aspects of COVID-19, the FDA is paying extra careful attention. So, you know, marketers, beware if you're saying inflammation on your website, in particular, if it's related to any type of context of COVID, whether it be blogs or something like that, I would say use some strong caution.
Proceed with caution, indeed. That right there is a golden nugget for anybody out there who's listening who might have that word on their website. Definitely be proactive so that you don't have to be reactive. Okay, so when we were talking the other day, we were talking about creativity in marketing, and this is something that you've also had a lot of expertise and a lot of experience with over the years, which is how do you say things in a way where you're conveying the same message, but you're not putting yourself in a position where you are taking on risk of maybe getting slapped on the wrist or getting a letter. And it came back to the Patagonia ad, "Don't buy this jacket." Well, people still bought the jacket, you know, and I believe they were making a point in that advertisement about sustainability, about the resources it took to create that jacket. And it really just shows how creative you can be in the world of marketing. And in your experience and kind of as we enter this new time, this new wave, these regulations that are forthcoming, can you speak a little bit to just the importance of creativity, of thinking outside of the box and finding a way to convey something to a customer where you're not putting yourself in potentially a world of hurt?
Yeah. All right. That's my favorite topic. I love this so much. I started my entire company around a lot of these core principles here. It's wonderful. You know, rule number one is, of course, be truthful and not misleading. And rule number one, 1.5 or 1A would be watch out for the buzzwords. The words that the FDA and FTC and, you know, potentially in their web crawlers are going to look out for. So a good example is with anxiety. And you wouldn't want to say, "My product's great for anxiety." You wouldn't say that on your label, but that might show up in a product review or a hashtag or an infographic and that type of thing. But we all know that anxiety is, CBD is widely touted for anxiety. So how do we say this? We can say happy mood support, balanced state of mind, mental resilience. Those are a couple examples on how to wordsmith it if they are truthful and not misleading. And then I love the how to advertise without making claims. Can you tell your company story in a compliant manner? There was one that I saw. It was a founder, and he was fly fishing, and he said, "I started my company because I wanted to go out and fly fish, and I got sore from fly fishing, so that's why I started my hemp CBD company." Super low budget, but it made me really connect with them, that cultivating that authentic consumer excitement. And so here's another way to do it is, let's say that there's an advertisement that someone wants to put on social and they want to highlight that their product is supportive for not inflammation, that'd be a claim, but discomfort or something like that. They may say something like, "Here's a picture of our employee hiking Rocky Mountain Park this weekend. Our employees love to get out and have a great quality of life. And while they're out there for recovery, they use our hemp CBD product for mental resilience and recovery." Now that's, you know, not without risk, but they're also connecting with the customer and connecting it back to the marketing in an authentic way. And that's really a fun discussion.
It also brings up a great point, which is that you don't want to market that your product does something to customers and consumers and then have them come back and be like, "You made this bold claim and it didn't do this for me." So there's that component in there too, which is you're going to let people down when you claim too much. And, you know, one of the core principles in a lot of businesses, under promise and over deliver. And maybe that also has some truth in this arena as well when it comes to marketing claims, which is not necessarily under promise, but, you know, promise in line so that you're not setting an expectation that you can't reach in the mind of a consumer. Because people know there are so many products out there that if you have one bad experience with one product, there's a whole ocean of other products to go and try. And it's very difficult to get that returning customer unless you really are just, it's a balancing act for, you know, the quality of the product, the messaging, the storytelling ability, the creativity and the marketing. There's no reason to sell yourself short with just trying to profit off of something you can't really deliver on. Well, Asa, I did want to also highlight that you have an upcoming regulatory event. I believe it's free of charge to attend, and I'd love if you would tell us a little bit about it, because it is on May 4th, and it is preparing for cannabinoid regulation. So give us a little sneak peek on what we can expect in that event.
I love educating, and all my educational events. I have a regulatory education platform called Regulatory Education Series, and you can find that on my website, which is my name. But I love educating. So this one is called Preparing for Cannabinoid Regulations, and it's primarily a new dietary ingredient and grass, or generally recognized as safe, conversation. So it's entry level, but it's also going to get very technical as well too, which we try to, on my regulatory education events, cover complicated topics and put them through a legal lens, a practical lens, and then a legislative lens as well too. So I'm very honored to have Office President Michael McGuffin speak, and then John L. Lagavon, a representative from Burdock Group that conducts a lot of the safety studies on there.
Well, Asa, not only are you a fantastic educator, but you have an exceptionally awesome personality. You are approachable, you're easygoing, you're fun to talk to. You're an absolute joy to have as a guest here on the Hoban Minute. And I want to make sure that before we sign off, we let our listeners know where they can keep up with you, where they can contact and reach you for any matter, but you know, specifically highlighting anybody out there who is trying to make sure that they are in compliance with all of the regulations that are out there, navigating the rigorous road of cannabis products. And so will you just tell us real quickly, what is the best way for people to reach you and to find more about what you're doing?
Perfect. My website is asawaldstein.com. That's asawaldstein.com. And through there, you can find links to my LinkedIn, which I'm very active, as you know, on LinkedIn, trying to do values forward educational posts there. My YouTube channel, which is my Regulatory Hints YouTube channel, that covers everything from made in the USA claims, here's what you need to watch out for, and Prop 65 guidance. And then I have a really detailed regulatory blog on my website, which I love. I actually just broke down an FDA warning letter, and I spent about 8 hours just parsing it apart and then writing my commentary on that. So yeah, you can find all that information and connect with me through my website, asawaldstein.com.
That is awesome. It is such a pleasure to talk to you today, Asa. I know that you're preparing for a fun weekend with some live music, so I just hope that you really get some wonderful weather and you get to just soak in the good vibes of being around people in a safe capacity, in a COVID-friendly capacity, but also just getting back out there. And I can't wait to get to spend some time with you here in the near future, and we can't wait to have you back on the Hoban Minute to keep discussing all of the developments that are happening in this space. So thank you so much for your time today, my friend.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me. I had a great time.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hoban Minute. Do you have any ideas for episode topics or guests? We would like to hear from you. Reach out to us at media@hoban.law, and stay tuned for more on the Hoban Minute.